And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as usual, I'm joined by Jan Dalton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello. Well, what a week of football has been.
He says that every week.
He does say that every week. And it's mostly because it's true.
Yeah.
But it really has been a week of football, hasn't it?
I'm sure he says that as well.
But it's true.
Yeah.
But it really, really has been.
It has been.
Quite a week of football.
Yes, it has.
We've had Iniesta's final flourish for Barcelona in the Copa del Rey final, although it's not actually technically his final flourish, but it was almost like a send-off in their 5-0 victory, as not predicted by me, in the weekend box set over Sevilla. We've had a last-minute winner in the Juventus Stadium for Napoli to narrow the gap at the top of Serie A to 1 point between Juve and Napoli. We had two semi-finals, with Spurs losing yet another semi-final.
Yet another one.
Yet another. We had non-VAR shenanigans in the other semi-final. Shenanigans that could have been VAR but weren't VAR, even though there was VAR. So there's always that. But here, in Sound of Football Towers, it's more solemn, would you say?
Yes. I'd say so.
Our flags are closed.
Yeah.
And our shutters are at half mast.
They are. Sunderland were relegated to the third tier.
Yes.
Second time in their nearly 140-year history.
Yes, illustrious history. Fine history.
Yeah.
Yes. Which is a great sadness.
Yeah, it was a great sadness. It's a real shame. Actually, what was slightly embarrassing is when I saw that they lost, which they threw away in the last kind of 5 or 6 minutes.
Mm.
And then had a goal disallowed, but anyway, that's history now. It required a bit of maths to work out they actually had been relegated, because I went away thinking, well, we've still got 6 points to play for. It's unlikely, but we can still do it with a gap of 6 points. But of course, two teams above us are playing each other, so it means that the minimum you have to get to is 41, and we can only get to 40 points. So that was pretty depressing when I sat down and started, you know, took my socks off and started counting my digits and realised that the game was finally up.
It was pretty heartbreaking because flash scores lied to you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did because we were all at the Whiteleaf game, the last knockings of that, and then flash scores came through saying that Sunderland had equalised. Mm. And then there was another one, I think it might have been the BBC, I don't know, I can't remember, there was another... another app that I have had said they'd confirmed the equaliser, and then they both slowly drip fed through the bad news that it was a correction, which is just horrible. Ugh. In a game like that where they just got it. I mean, I know it was they try and get the goal out there as fast as they can, but
yeah.
You know, just it was the cock up that confirmed our relegation as well, which is just it does the worst thing.
It does go to show, doesn't it, that even in this day and age that these kind of mistakes can happen. This has always happened in the past, not always, but it has happened in the past. I've been in a football stadium once years ago when Palace thought that we were in the playoffs, only to discover that, in fact, we'd been given the wrong score over the announcements and we weren't in the playoffs. This was back in the 1980s.
So that came over the tannoy then?
Yeah, and we were all celebrating, and then we weren't. Then we were going home. I mean, even the day of modern technology and apps and all of that, it still comes down to a human being pressing the wrong button.
Yes.
Or getting carried away or pressing the button too early. Because, they're under pressure to get the results out now.
Yes, yes.
Still, yeah, never mind. What do you think needs to be done then to get Sunderland back into the Premier League?
Well, Coleman said today that depending on who the new owners are, if we even get a new owner, that he will hang around. Because I think, you know, he'll see this as a bit of a blight on his record, and he'll want to correct that. And hopefully, if he gets a run at it next season, then he will. But yeah, I mean, as I've said before, there needs to be a change of owner. Mm. And I think Ellis Short would let the club go into administration. I don't think we're going to actually do a Leeds, although we're doing our best to emulate that. But I think he'll continue to keep the lights on. But I don't think there's going to be any investment in the squad again. And that's what's terrifying if he doesn't manage to sell the club on. So that's the nightmare scenario. But, you know, we've got a whole summer for that to sort itself out.
Indeed, you have a whole summer to sort itself out. But there's another club that probably has somewhat less than a whole summer to sort out its business. Isn't that right, Graham?
There is, yes.
Yeah, obviously, listeners will know Graham is an Arsenal fan. What may not be known to listeners is, because Graham hosts the show, he doesn't always offer his most forthright opinions on the Arsenal manager, and it should be said, his defence of the Arsenal manager. I've seen Graham almost beat people to death who have suggested in the past that Arsene Wenger should be sacked. And that's not an exaggeration.
That one guy did die.
That one guy. Yeah. Yeah, well, we don't mention him. Yeah, don't. You might have to cut that out, mate.
Yeah. I will, actually. In fact, he was probably very ill anyway.
Yeah.
He was certainly asking for it, whatever it was.
But he looked pretty ill when I saw him last
year. Yeah, in fairness, he looked very ill, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Graham, not only an Arsenal fan, but also a defender and a fan of Arsene Wenger and all that he's done. So let's just have your reaction to the news that Arsene Wenger is stepping down at the end of the season.
Non-surprised. I think that's probably what my real reaction was. Obviously, when I first heard the news, it was actually a little bit, oh, wow, that is something unexpected, because the timing of these sort of announcements always is. But it is more of a question of, well, that was going to happen at some point. And I think I've actually said on the podcast, I think, that I thought he may go at the end of the season, even though he'd actually signed on an extra extension that's taken through next year. And I think the talk that's been going on as well throughout the season, they talk about Ancelotti that happened a couple of months ago as well. Mm. I think that was all pretty much gearing up to something like this happening. So, as I say, other than the initial, I don't want to say surprise, but sort of like the lack of expectation of an announcement like that coming out, or that how different that is after 22 years of him being at the club, it was more of a case of, well, yeah, this has been something that has been coming for a while now. So,
yeah, and from a less Arsenal's perspective, it struck me, it almost felt like the news that you hear when a big bank has suddenly gone under or something like that.
Yeah. It did feel, well, it was colossal news. And what I noticed almost straight away in the narrative was this change away from Wenger out to this sudden softening of that. Very, very quickly you saw that across the Twitter. It was less knives out and was more kind of, isn't it a shame, isn't it? And this is an end of an era. And it is the end of an era, clearly. But there was a softening of that. And some of the narrative in the newspapers didn't seem as vitriolic as they'd been in the past.
I haven't had a look at Arsenal Fan TV. I don't know whether you have, but I mean, would we care to speculate just how much of Brutus they're going to be, if you'll forgive the classical reference, on Arsenal Fan TV? Because Brutus, who made the speech after having murdered Caesar, praising him in order to get the mob on his side.
I think it is more, because a lot of the narrative from Wenger out has actually been sort of, you've been great for the club, but it's time for you to go. That was the real horrible narrative that was going around from a large section of the Wenger out group, which was, I didn't like that. But obviously now they're getting exactly what they've asked for. Or like they'll say, oh, it should have happened 4 or 5 seasons ago, should have happened 10 seasons ago for some of them. It is weird when you've heard loads of bickering amongst fans for ages, and now there's nothing to argue about because he is going. But it does seem in a way that, well, he was going to have to go at some point. He was going to go somewhere.
I suppose even the people who were loyal to him were fans of his.
Yeah.
It's not just you, obviously. There's loads of people.
Yeah, it's a majority.
I would say, I don't follow all the Arsenal fans on Twitter. Otherwise, I would be insane.
You would.
But, I mean, I certainly follow enough to get a fairly good indication that most of them, I think, certainly were behind him and didn't want him to go. And of course, you know, some of those guys are quite young and it's really all they've never known.
Well, there is the fear of the unknown, I think, for a lot of fans.
Sure.
I think a lot of fans, especially, any fan who's under 30 won't know the club.
Not really, no.
Under anyone else.
I mean, we are old enough to be able to recall George Graham.
Yes.
And you even earlier, not because you're older than me, in fact you're not, but because you've been an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
But I mean, it'd be like you probably have vivid memories of Terry Neill.
Yeah.
And Don Howe and all of that.
But half of my Arsenal life has been Wenger.
Yeah.
I was, 27 when he took over the club.
It was a very different club before Wenger. And
oh,
I think that, I know this is a very easy thing to say, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it really was a very different club.
Yeah.
Do you think that 22 years is enough to have changed that club? How likely do you think it might be that actually Arsenal might end up changing back, or going, not changing fully back, because that would be impossible,
yeah,
but perhaps adopting more characteristics of the old boring Arsenal, the well-known drinking one culture in the dressing room, yeah, and the various issues that came from that. Do you think that Arsene has succeeded in changing Arsenal for good?
I think so. I don't think anyone is left there of that old Arsenal. They're not at the same ground. They're not at the same training ground.
So it's an entirely different club now.
Yeah, it is. It's a completely different beast. Bruce Rioch at the time was the equivalent of Tony Pulis today, wasn't he? Really?
I suppose so, yeah. Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that, I must confess.
Well, he had a very pragmatic approach to the game when he was with Bolton, didn't he?
Yes.
And he got the Arsenal job because he kept beating Arsenal. And he was the last manager that we had before Wenger.
Mm.
And I just cannot see them going for someone like that again. So that was where we were shopping back then.
Mm.
And then, obviously, David Dean introduced Arsene Wenger to the club. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah.
Didn't the chief executive at a press conference the other day saying they want someone who will continue the same footballing philosophy as Arsene Wenger? So I don't think they want to turn back the clock to, I don't think they'd want to go for somebody who will just grind out. We'll do like what a Mourinho sometimes can do and get really ultra pragmatic and ultra defensive and just go, let's just grind out the results.
Yeah, what Terry was saying earlier about what Wenger has done for the club is very valid. The Arsenal brand in the 90s was doing the Merce. That's what the Arsenal brand was. It was chucking Stephen Morrow over your shoulder. It was that's what we had there. And, you know, the Gooners loved it, but that couldn't go on in the modern world. And obviously Arsenal were being left behind come the mid-90s. They were falling further and further back. All right, they won the Cup Winners' Cup, failed to defend it with the last-minute halfway line kick. But we were in troubled times there. George Graham was on the take, doing things that you wouldn't get away with nowadays. He had to go back. When he went back into management, he had to do it completely differently. He couldn't get away with the stuff that he was getting away with before. Basically, the club allowed him to do that because he kept winning stuff for him. But, you know, he was on the take, rightly or wrongly. You know, buying players that profited him rather than profited the club.
Mm. Yeah. And Arsenal was never anything like that. Look, they had that set up with David Dean, where David Dean was essentially the sporting director of the club, wasn't he? So
he signed
the players, although, you know, under supervision, really, from Arsene. Why don't we reflect for a moment on some of those players that he did bring into the club, because he brought in some amazing players,
yes,
didn't he? I was reading a really good article, which I've forgotten who wrote it, I apologise, but it was on the BBC website, about the African players that he brought in. He was really, not the first, but among the first, and certainly a pioneer of getting that African pipeline going.
Yeah.
Guys like Kanu and Kolo Touré and Christopher Ray, you know, and who's... name was escaping.
Adebayor.
These were players that really lit things up. I mean, he did an awful lot, I guess, for African football in that regard as well, by giving them that opportunity.
Yeah, there was a narrative throughout that time from managers of other clubs bemoaning the fact that African players disappeared every couple of years in February, March, to go and play in the African Cup of Nations, which obviously they didn't hold a lot of store in because it wasn't European or it wasn't...
seem to recall when we were doing the Onion Bag back in the day, we railed against that.
Yes.
We just cut that down to colonialism, or at the very least a wish to exploit cheap labour.
Yeah.
And then denying them their international tournament.
Yeah.
That may have been a simplistic view.
Yeah, but I know, but it was a satirical website, so we could take simplistic views.
That's very true. But, I mean, obviously, you know, there's guys like, not just Henri, which we all, one of the great players of all time. You know, I'm thinking about Vieira and the Invincibles series. I mean, give us some, romanticise a bit about that Invincibles team and that great Arsene Wenger era, which perhaps people will never be able to get back, and maybe that's why his stock gently lowered down the years.
That sort of came right at the end of the Ferguson-Wenger rivalry that had dominated football for almost a decade. So you've had two clubs being one and two for the last, I think, eight seasons coming into that. This is just when Abramovich just takes over at Chelsea. And Man United are in a moment of, one of the many times when Ferguson has to rebuild United. They don't win the title for another three seasons after that, which was a huge gap in that period for United. Wenger builds this team, and it goes over about three seasons, because in 2002, I think they only lost one game away from home, and they were really forming this strong side. 2003 was a very disappointing season, considering what they had. That team really should have won three back-to-back titles, but they just disappointed at certain points. And then what they really did, they started that season, that 2003-2004 season, really on point, and it just went through, and it was just incredible. And I think it's easy to point at things that managers win, the trophies they win, and the way they play, and the players they bring forward. But that invincible side, it's shown this season with Man City, this great Man City side that everyone is you know, exploding with quite rightly, because they're a fantastic side. But it shows you how difficult it is to go 38 games without losing. Barcelona are getting closer to it. They've got a Clásico to come. They've got 33 games. They're on a 40 game. I think they're up to 40 games now unbeaten. And, you know, this is exciting. Consider a club like Barcelona. If they manage it, no one's ever managed it in La Liga before. But if they manage it, it will go down in history. It will be the most famous victory that they've had, because they did it unbeaten in a season in La Liga where there's been some crazy results.
Mm. Yeah, and they're still getting stick. Valverde is still getting stick from some Barca fans, and they don't feel as if they're actually having a good season, and yet they appear to be.
They've just won the cup final 5-0.
Yeah, and they've sealed the double. But I think a lot of it is because they're very angry about the Roma results still, and just feel
they're disappointed about that. They're still pissed off about Neymar as well, and that.
Yeah.
So there is this sort of thing, but that will be forgotten if at the end of the season they've got 38 games and zero in the loss column. These are so rare, these seasons. It's happened a couple of times in Italy in recent memory. But other than that, I mean, you can look at things. There are outliers like Steaua Bucharest between 86 and 88. They went three seasons without losing a game. But that was when Ceausescu was basically saying, Hagi, you're playing for Steaua Bucharest now.
Yeah, there's a degree of stacking the deck, I suppose.
Yeah, there was. Yeah. And Steaua Bucharest will win a European title.
I mean, it wasn't just the great players that he brought in, of course, but it was what he did with the existing old guard that was there. And the obviously, it's to their great credit that they, you know, the guys like Ray Parlour and Paul Merson and Tony Adams sort of, you know, embraced the new system. It were obviously, Wenger deserves a great deal of praise for convincing these guys that, you know, they could actually improve under him. But I think nothing more sums that up than that final goal in that first title win by Tony Adams right at the end. I mean, it wasn't a decisive goal in so as much, but the fact that, you know, you've got this guy who, and it's no exaggeration, had previously been reputed to be, you know, he was called a donkey.
Mm.
You know, and although he had merit as a player, I mean, he had some personal problems, and he'd been in trouble with the law. But to see him sort of like running through like a gazelle, latching onto that through ball, rifling it home as though his name, as though he had right eight on his back.
Yeah. Bold made that pass.
Just illustrates the transformation.
That is his statue outside the Emirates now. The statue of Tony Adams is his celebration. I saw that with his hands out like that, as if, you know, this is what I have transformed completely.
Yeah.
And he had transformed, because Wenger sent him off to France for a month during that season, because he was having trouble aligning himself with the new system. And there had been confrontations with the old guard and the new guard to say, look, this isn't working. You can't just send both fullbacks out because we're old guys and we don't know how to defend like that. But they sorted it out, and they had Petit and Vieira ostensibly brought in to be centre-backs. They were going to be the new centre-backs, but they were converted into defensive midfielders.
Mm.
Didn't go forward. So you had this defensive line that was solid. You couldn't attack Arsenal down the middle. You could only come around down the sides. With people like Dixon and Winterburn, who didn't mind bombing forward, Winterburn's goal against Chelsea, that will live on in the minds of many Arsenal fans 20 years on. And you still think, oh, yeah, Winterburn's goal when he just ran through down the side and whacked it into the far corner. But obviously, the problems he had is obviously that unit that was played there. And if you total up all their caps together, it's like into the thousands. And replacing those was never going to be easy. And I think that's where he's always struggled, actually, is buying defenders. I mean, he's come up with some really good defenders and goalkeepers as well, but he's found diamonds in the rough. People like Jens Lehmann.
Mm.
It was a great find, and he deserved invincible because he was someone who was everything you want out of a goalkeeper. He was a great goalkeeper, but he was also a bit nuts.
He was really definitely a character in the truest sense of old-school goalkeepers. Yeah. One of the few players who emerged, I think, with his reputation, despite playing for both Schalke and Dortmund in Germany.
Really?
Yeah, so, I think he sort of, gets away with it because of the nature, and because he was just so damn good.
Mm.
And would have got a stack more caps for Germany if it wasn't for a certain Oliver Kahn. So. Well, yeah, maybe I'll ask you this question. How would you quantify European success for Arsene Wenger? I'm thinking in terms of their Champions League. Was their consistent appearance in the Champions League a success, or was their inability to get much beyond the quarterfinals, apart from obviously in 2005, a failure?
I think that if you can, it was 20 seasons, wasn't it? 20 consecutive seasons they qualified for the Champions League. Which is fantastic, but I was thinking actually on my way up here whether that was something they got used to, and maybe as they became less of a force in English football, not necessarily because they were drifting back, but maybe because Manchester City were starting to become resurgent and Chelsea being as strong as they ever were, that maybe they kind of got addicted to that and kind of thought, well, that'll do. I know, Graham, you'll disagree with that, as obviously you're a big Wenger supporter, but it just made me wonder whether they could have pulled the trigger earlier. Maybe the constant European qualification was actually something that held them back from themselves, really, and that they could have done something sooner, but they kind of got used to that, the sweetness of that every season.
It is tricky, though, isn't it? The club is in a difficult position because he's getting them into that position every year, and there's no arguing with it.
Mm.
And it became a bit of a joke, wouldn't it? Oh yeah, look, Arsenal have got the trophy, the Arsene Wenger trophy for finishing fourth in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And it ties into various narratives about how, rubbish it is to pursue glory through finishing runner-up but in fairness though, Graham, this is the nature of the Champions League. This is what the Champions League has created. This is the criteria for entry, is finishing in the top four.
Yeah.
And it's ironic, though, isn't it? Because, to an extent, Tottenham are getting that kind of grief now, aren't they? Because they're all about they haven't won any trophies, despite the fact that they are really, really good. Mm. And actually, by modern criteria, very successful.
Yeah, they are. They're a successful business now.
Mm.
And that's what Arsenal have been ever since moving into the Emirates. This is what it's all been about. It's about paying off your mortgage. Yeah, it was really disappointing every year to think, right, okay, oh, look, it's Bayern. Oh, look, it's Barcelona. Getting them in the second round pretty much every year was getting rather tedious. And then when we won our group, we got Monaco and got absolutely schooled by them. it was just same old every time. And the thing is as well, because I'm old, the seasons come and go so quickly. So you don't realise it's been so long since. Mm. I mean, for me, that final in 2006 it seemed not that long ago. But no. When you think, oh, yeah, it's 12 years ago. I heard on the radio when they were talking about when Arsenal last won a European Cup 24 years ago, they were saying, 1994. And I was like, it wasn't 24 years ago. We won the Cup Winners' Cup in Copenhagen in 1994. Oh, yeah, that is 24 years ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
And
it came closer. Obviously, there's the very famous Naeem winner. But there was the
UEFA Cup in 2000 Cup. As well.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's right.
Which we lost.
Galatasaray?
Yes.
I want to say. Yeah, which was a bit gutting, I would imagine.
Yeah, they knocked Chelsea out earlier on, and it was 0-0. Yeah,
decent side.
And, they were a decent side. Well, yeah. They were an all right side. We should have beaten them.
But, sure.
We had most of the play in that game, but we lost on penalties.
Your interpretation of the Wenger, I assume your interpretation of the Wenger era, particularly in the latter stage of the Wenger era, is bringing this club through with its new stadium, its new training ground, essentially rewriting the DNA of the club,
yeah,
picking up some trophies while doing it, and still consistently winning trophies even up until last season.
Yeah, there was a large gap. There was a large gap there.
That's true. Yes.
And the recent memory has been helped by winning three FA Cups. And for three FA Cups over 20 years is good.
Yes.
Well, winning them over four
one
years.
FA Cup over 20 years is good. Yeah. Yeah. One FA Cup over a century is good.
Yes.
And this can never be forgotten.
Oh, yes.
It's been not silverware all the way, but almost all the way. So, I mean, you know, he definitely leaves the ground in credit then.
Yeah.
A statue next weekend. How would you feel about a statue and renaming the stadium, or are you not that sentimental?
Unless he changes his name to Emirates, it's not going to change his name anytime soon, is it?
Well, the Emirates Arsene Wenger Stadium, maybe. Maybe Emirates should sponsor Arsene Wenger, and then that way it'll just come round like that.
Yeah,
I think for the next manager, as we saw with the Alex Ferguson stand, I mean,
exactly,
that would just be the worst thing ever.
We've got plenty of
massive
hubris. We've got plenty of hubris
Arsenal,
at the Emirates.
Yeah. So, well, that's one element of I would argue, that one element of the football club that maybe hasn't been able to get rid of, because all big clubs tend to have that. Why don't we talk about possible successors? Jan, have you got any thoughts as to who you think? I know Graham will bound to have an opinion. What's your opinion on who you think would be a good choice for a manager? Do you think they should go short-medium-termish, three-year deal, or go for a young revolutionary?
Well, my heart would love to see them go for a young revolutionary. But I think, obviously, I'm not going to make a prediction, because we don't do that in the centre of football. But I wouldn't be surprised, given how important qualification for the Champions League has been for them for so long, because it became such a mainstay of their success, that they will go for somebody with a pedigree within that competition. So it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Ancelotti's been mentioned already. That certainly wouldn't surprise me. Luis Enrique as well is out of work as well. So I think between those two, I mean, I'm looking at the betting odds now, and they actually are the favourites. I think that's the type of and calibre of coach that they'll go for.
I'm thinking that Allegri is going to be a good choice for Arsenal coach if they can persuade him.
Yes.
To leave, and I think he might be persuaded to go. I think he's done Juventus are a very, very powerful football club in Italian football.
Yeah.
But he really has exploited all of the resources available to him.
And if Napoli turn it around in that.
Yeah, there might be some appetite for him to make a change anyway. Yeah. So it could well be a kind of you are desperate to buy and we are desperate to sell kind of situation. So I think that he's a good one. I would love to see Domenico Tedesco be given, or Julian Nagelsmann be given a crack. But they
it's
are
good to
young,
see them up in,
and it
in
is
the
good
betting.
To see them there. And I would be disappointed if they weren't even being thought
Ralph
about.
Ralph Hasenhüttl's there as well.
I'm less certain about Ralph Hasenhüttl.
Yeah.
He's too much of a Red Bull
man, in my opinion. He's a bit of an outlier there.
I'd be wary of these Red Bull guys, to be honest with you. They're part of a bigger system. I would be wary about hiring those guys.
There does seem to be a lot of German flavour amongst the purchases that we do now. I mean, you can see there's at least, I think, 7 or 8 players
on our
books.
That'll be your new technical director.
who have played in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't surprise me if they go with someone who has got Bundesliga. And yes, if the technical director has got any say in it, then someone with Bundesliga experience could be coming in. So I know Ancelotti didn't have a good time at Bayern, but as you say, Bayern are in a although they're running away with things, they're not in the most comfortable places at the moment. I think he might be a good short term.
Yeah,
give him one season. There was a lot of talk around in Arsenal Twitter about how Per Mertesacker's performance at the weekend on the bench, when he was standing basically one step behind Wenger for a lot of it, shouting out to be almost a more animated version of Steve Bould on the touchline there. I think he's got a really bright future ahead of him. Don't ask me why I know this, but I think he just is. I think he's that sort of intelligent
thinking. He's highly regarded.
Yeah. He strikes me as someone who could be like a Jurgen Klopp, but perhaps without the scariness. But I think it would be nice if he could have a manager that like Ancelotti, who could mould him.
Yes.
Into something. Whether or not whether he does that at Arsenal or goes somewhere else.
Maybe goes somewhere else,
that might be even more helpful if he does that.
Yeah.
But I think with an eye of coming back and being a more long-term replacement.
I'm not a big fan of the... Well, I am a big fan, but I'm also not a big fan of Brendan Rodgers. I'm a big fan of comedy.
I don't know why he's third on
and
the
I don't.
The
well, he there. Just seems to it's be very... Surprising. He's just turning up there, and he's got... Because he's got a lot... People in the UK think very highly of Brendan Rodgers. I'm less than convinced myself. I'm also not convinced by Patrick Vieira. Yeah. Apart from anything else, Patrick Vieira is like in the way Hasenhüttl is part of the Red Bull group... Vieira is part of that City group.
And
now.
The same with Arteta. He's been linked. I don't see that at all.
Yeah, no, they're on separate career paths, and I don't know whether they're necessarily... We can rule out Thomas Tuchel because of the aforementioned technical director. They didn't get on. That's the reason why the guy left, was Thomas Tuchel, so we can rule him out. And I really think that I can't see Eddie Howe getting into that
job. He's
going
to be the longest-serving Premier League manager now.
I suppose he probably is, actually, isn't he? Yeah. And Conte is a nice idea, but I think...
I think he'll leave
Chelsea?
The country.
I think he might go back to
Well, yeah, he's going to go back. He'll probably end up at United.
But let me chuck one more name at you.
Yeah.
Pochettino.
Yes. Well, yes.
Because of what he said after the semi-final.
Yeah.
Do you think he's going for that job? Do you think he wants that job?
I think he'll be open to the possibility of it. He wouldn't be the first one to do it.
I mean, in fairness, well, I mean, you go back a long way, of course, then the clubs are too close together. There's always been cross-fertilisation. But, in the modern era, would it be a big thing? I don't know.
Well, I mean, even when Venables and Graham were the managers of the two clubs, these were best mates.
Yes.
That's how small the London community of football clubs actually is.
Yeah.
You know, they all hang out in the same clubs. Yeah, well, obviously Pochettino is a much more different world now. But Pochettino, he's not on that list, is he?
He's not.
No.
Which surprises me.
Yeah.
It surprises me that he's not on that list, because I'd have thought that there was a good chance that Poch might. I mean, I think that would be unpalatable in certain quarters.
I think the noises he's making could be a tactical move on his part, because I think he's looking at the summer and thinking... I've got names like Ericsson and Kane there, and there are going to be people after the World Cup sniffing around for talent just like those two, and Dembele as well. And they're going to be looking at that central line that in Tottenham, thinking, right, we'll have those.
Mm.
And he's saying to Levy, if any of those three go, or one I could probably just about live with if you give me some money to go out and spend, but. If I start losing players like that, I've got to go
to a club.
The project's
over, yeah. And it's also considered that Zidane is probably leaving Real Madrid as well.
Yeah.
And so therefore, and Pochettino, I'm sure, would be easily qualified for that.
That is much more.
And that's probably, we've talked about this on this podcast in previous weeks about that, have we not?
Well, the other names down there, I mean, Simeone is fun. That's a fun pick. I can't see that. I think it's only just there because he's the name of someone who people know manages in Europe. I think that's the only reason why he's there. I can't see why he would do it. There's a lot of narrative going around there, obviously, because we're playing them twice in the upcoming weeks. Leonardo Jardim. Now, I said on this podcast about a year ago, I wouldn't be surprised if there would be something like a swap role going there at Monaco for... Wenger, just to see out the last couple of years before retirement at Monaco, and for Jardim to come the other way. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, honestly. I really don't. Monaco got... they finished second. They're a long way behind PSG now, because PSG have just absolutely loaded up their team now. They after losing the title last season, and they've certainly put Monaco to the sword.
PSG's Unai Emery is leaving.
Yes.
To be replaced by Thomas Tuchel, apparently. Maybe there's an option. He's done a reasonable job at PSG, but they were bitterly disappointed with their European Cup.
Yes.
He's certainly done what he expected, but he did a very good job with Sevilla.
Yeah.
And that Sevilla team was tasty.
Yeah, yeah. And you're seeing the fact that Sevilla are starting to slip away now.
Definitely, And Sevilla are probably going to sack their coach as well.
They're not even the best team in their city now.
No, by no means.
Yeah. Easily see that happening, actually. Interested, I think, because Yogi Love is actually quite high up on the odds there.
I think that's money.
Yeah.
That's because there's a lot of money being put on him. I don't know whether there's anything in there.
Yeah, I can't see that.
I think the feeling
is... I don't think you go for a national team coach.
He wants to do a club job, but I think he wants to take a bit of a break afterwards.
Yeah.
And also, frankly, you need to have someone in post before the World Cup.
Yeah. Mm.
And it isn't going to be him.
No.
Exactly.
And when I say in post, I don't mean lined up. I mean someone ready and working during the World Cup, and obviously Yogi Love is not going to be doing that, is he?
Well, it's my turn to do the box set this week. I'm going to focus on Serie A because that's the only show in town at the moment, really.
Yep.
That and the Championship promotion race as mm-hmm. well. So I've got a couple of games from there. I've got Middlesbrough, Millwall. That's for some playoff shenanigans there. Well, in Italy, we've got Fiorentina, Napoli.
Mm.
And we've got Inter-Juve.
Inter-Juve, the Derby d'Italia.
Yeah, so those two, that is reason enough for you to go to tinyletter.com/soundoffootball and put your email address in and subscribe, because a free email is going to tell you all about those fixtures. 7 fixtures to watch take you from Friday to Sunday. Now, next week, we're going to have a special podcast for you. Because, what are we doing, Jan?
We're going to Germany.
We are, aren't we? Yeah. We're going to Berlin, and we're going to go and see Hertha Berlin play Augsburg. And we're going to see some non-league as well.
We're hoping to see some Berlin Liga, but I think we'll all depend, see how our heads are feeling.
Yeah, we do arrive on Friday, Sunday. So by the time Sunday morning comes around...
We might be dead.
We may be dead. We're not as young as we used to be. Mm. So we'll I'll hopefully get time to have a chat about the game and about German football in general. After the game, maybe even have a special guest on there.
If we can convince him to come out of hiding. Yeah.
Or if we can convince someone else to.
We might just pick a random German person and say, do you want to be on a podcast?
Why not?
That'll be next week's podcast. So until then, from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Dalton, and from Tony's family, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Yeah, we've got to talk about Sunderland again, which is a bit more...
We'll
never talk about Sunderland ever.
Because if we did it at the end, I would have been sitting there going... Oh, it's going to come up at some point.
Yeah, there would have been a knot in your stomach.
And I'd just been like, oh, God, when are we going to do it? Can we just do it now?